Another Yehuda Sussman on February 3, 2019, talking about Alexa, can I use you on Shabbos, thoughts of Shabbos, and the age of artificial intelligence.
Plus for four.
Thank you very much. It's really a pleasure to be here. Thank you. I want to thank the Education Committee, David Jacobowitz, Mark, for the invitation to come and I want to thank the Education Committee, David Jacobowitz and Mark for extending the invitation to come and speak. This particular shiur is really, I was told that I have about an hour to, I hope that's okay with everyone, because really it's about a 15-hour presentation. So I'm not exaggerating, because actually I'm underestimating the amount of time. If I were to be giving this within the context of a sheer setting, I would probably just thinking about when before I began with Yeshivat Eretz Tzvi. So I was the Rosh Kolel in Yeshivat HaMiftar, which no longer exists, but I was responsible for training young men to become Rabbanim and getting them ready for their smicha exams. And so, of course, this is going back more than 20 years ago, but it was, so the artificial intelligence wasn't an issue then. But a lot of the underlying issues here, and I'm only going to try to basically squeeze three shiurim into one, but the question of electricity, which is going to be the first part of the presentation, and then the second part of the presentation being the question of Malechet Machshevet, trying to understand the notion of on Shabbat, of exactly how much intention is necessary in order for the Isurim or the Melachot to be an issue. And then finally, the question of what's the nature of Shabbat. So those first two sections were in that context, I think took about 10-15 shiurim or so to go through all the various issues, and I'm going to be trying to squeeze it into about 20 minutes each, and then we'll talk about the larger issue. But the question, and I want to just throw this out, I'll do a spoiler alert, right? Because you have the question, Alexa, can I use you on Shabbat? So, as a doorstop, if you unplug it before Shabbat, that's okay. But right now, the answer would be no. So if anyone just wants the psak, I'm not here to give a psak halacha in any event. That's the last thing that I would want to do to come here. I'm much more of a, I would like to think of myself anyway, more as an educator. And I think that the real core question here isn't going to be the question of whether or not Alexa is the Amazon Echo or any of the other similar devices are mutter currently on Shabbat or not, but rather the question of what is Shabbat, and specifically what is Shabbat, as can Shabbat evolve, should Shabbat evolve into the 21st century and beyond, and does that have a ripple effect backwards into how Shabbat is observed? Yes.
What's the Aveira?
Okay, so we'll talk about it. Okay, this is exactly the question. Okay, the question should be, perhaps if I can rephrase, is the question what is the Aveira? Should that be the question? That's what it will take me, as I said, about 15 to 20 hours squeezed into 20 minutes to get, or to 40 minutes to get to that point. So I take that, so I hope that you have that kind of patience to help that. So the first part I'd like to talk about here on the first page is a simple question. I would like to change from the technology questions of the 21st century to the technology questions of the late 19th century. And at this point, electricity has now been introduced, I won't say invented, because of course electricity has always been around, but now electricity has been harnessed, and and Edison has invented the light bulb. And the question becomes, or for that matter, Edison, Tesla have dealt with radio waves. And now in the late 19th century, we have the question of, can you use this newfangled device called an incandescent bulb? And there's no grid, there's no electrical grid yet. We're talking about situations where people have some kind of primitive generators, batteries, etc., that are connected. And the question becomes, is this mutter? Now, on the table that I've put together here, the really are three different approaches on the right side of the table to the question. And I put the dates more or less, and I might be off a little bit because of I didn't go and examine exactly when this particular tshuvot were printed, which collections, etc. But based on the dates of publications of the particular tshuvot, and you'll see that all of these discussions are going back to the end of the 19th century, the very beginning of the 20th century. I'm not going to go chronologically in terms of the way that they were dealt, but rather in terms of the notion of, we all take for granted, I think we all take for granted, that electricity is usur on Shabbat. The use of electricity is usur on Shabbat. That's, I think, a pretty fair assumption. But the question is, to use the same question that was raised a moment ago, what is the Avera? Why is electricity usur on Shabbat? After all, it's not going to be found in any of the melachot directly. It's something which is being brought to bear some 3,200 years or so after Matan Torah. Why should electricity be usur? This new technology. That's really the question. And there were some poskim, and you can imagine how different our Shabbat would be had their position been accepted, that there were some poskim who basically said electricity isn't usur. There is no Avera. After all, if I ask a fifth grader, what is the definition of the word malacha, and he'll tell me, or she will tell me, the word that it means work, and then I'll say, okay, flipping this switch, is this really work, yes or no? And then we have to come to a different type of definition as to what is the word malacha, that it's more a question of creative activity than it is a question of of work in the sense that we normally think of it. But is that, as I said, is that really true? And there were poskim who understood that the use of electricity, again, they were talking about an incandescent bulb without the anything even of early 20th century technology, but they felt that this was going to be mutar, and there are many permutations on this theme. As I said, it's a seminar in of itself. However, as we all know, the consensus became that electricity was usur, and here I'm going to deal with three primary approaches as to why it should be usur. And then on the left side is all of the responses of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal in mid-20th century, writing what has become a landmark piece on the nature of electricity, responding to the different approaches, and basically rejecting the different approaches or modifying them to a certain degree. The first approach, as I said, this is not chronological. Chronologically, this probably is the last of the approaches, was the approach of the Chazon Ish. And he published this in 1911. I said I'm not 100% sure, because it might have been published in the second volume when it was published in 1923. Be that as it may, at the beginning of the 20th century, the Chazon Ish, living in Vilna at the time, so his understanding is of the following, that electricity is usur on a d'oraita level, on a Torah level, because of the problem of a combination, because in his writing he switches back and forth, so it's hard to know what is the primary issue that's involved. But some kind of combination of bone, of building, and or tikkun mana, makeb patish, the catch-all melacha, number 38, in which this melacha, that basically you finish, you complete another task, and because it's a catch-all melacha, it requires a tremendous amount of elucidation in its own right, so that could be another few shiurim. But basically, his argument is the following. If you take a look at what goes on inside the machine, and I've spoken to some people who looking at it from a technical and technological point, are not 100% sure that the information that the Chazon Ish was receiving was totally accurate, but this is the way that it's understood, and both inside what's going on inside the machine, as well what's going on in terms of what the observer sees, and that is, inside the machine, that you have a circuit which is being closed or opened in order to allow the electricity to flow or to stop from flowing. And the Chazon Ish was of the opinion that just simply closing that circuit was an act of, again, either bone, right? Because now you have something which was sort of open, and now the two connectors touch one another, you've closed that, and that is that has a creative process. He says that if it's something which is plugged into the wall, so then it is even as though you are basically building something, or if the circuitry is inside the wall, so then you're building something in a permanent structure, which it would be an issur d'oraita. Or if you're taking a look at it from the perspective, if you will, from the observer's perspective, if you have a light bulb which was out and now it's not working, the moment that I now have a lit bulb, so now it's something which is useful. That would be makeb patish, that would be something which is useful and would be categorized as makeb patish, and he is aware of an objection, which is going to be the primary objection of the Minchat Shlomo of Rav Shlomo Zalman, in which he says here on the top of the table on the right side, and the bold on the bottom of that first piece, va'af im hashimush hu lishaot miuchadot va'achar kach posko. So even if the use is in effect temporary, right? You turn on the light, you turn on the fan, or whatever it is, and it's important to note, he's saying that it doesn't matter what you are using it for, so you have just the electricity itself, so even though it goes on and off, so you have, at the moment that I look at it, he says, right now I have a working object, and that working object has to be taken into account, and that is boneh. So basically, he's saying you have to take a snapshot view of what's going on. I've created something, it's boneh. I want to turn off the light. It's the opposite. It's soter. It's breaking it. This is his opinion. Now, just hold on one second. The argument against, okay, because I really have to start moving a little bit faster. The argument against of Shlomo Zalman is that, and others as well. It's important to put the Chazon Ish out there, but it's an outlier chumra shita. And, you know, I guess you can illustrate it just by opening and closing the door. I've done the same thing as a circuit, right? I can't do it here because the jacket's in the way, but if I close the door, so I've closed the circuit. If I open the door, I've opened the circuit. Why is that not considered to be bone? Why is that not considered to be makeb patish? But yet, if I speak about it on an electrical side, it is. So that is the primary argument, but the Chazon Ish, both because of who he was and also because of the sense of, well, perhaps this kind of super creative activity that is generated by electricity should be usur. So it remains on the, if you will, it remains on the radar in terms of the psikat halacha, even though it is, for the most part, rejected. An earlier opinion, that of Rav Yitzchak Shmelkus, who was one of the Beit Yitzchak, who was the one of the leading poskim of the late 19th century, a person in Galicia who wrote several landmark tshuvot on all sorts of technological and sociological changes that were going on at that time. So he has a different approach. This is the middle approach here. This is the approach which can be called molid. Molid meaning that it is a rabbinic dictum. The example that he gives is that the Gemara had used is that if you have a some kind of garment and you wanted it to be scented in some way and you perfumed it or you used incense, whatever it was, in order to give this particular garment that aroma. So the Gemara says that introduction of a new state to this, it's not asur min haTorah. If you take a look at any of the melachot, you're not going to find any isur with regard to this. However, the fact that you have an object which was usable, right? You could wear this piece of clothing regardless, but now you've introduced this new scent into it. So that change of state, and perhaps other examples can be made in other areas with regard to melting snow or ice to make water, things along those lines, creating a new state for an object, even though it's not milacha on a Torah basis, but still it is close enough to it that the Chachamim were uncomfortable with it, and felt that this creativity that's involved is something which should be forbidden on Shabbat. This is the Gemara that talks about it. He wants to make the argument that this should also hold true with regard to electricity. That basically, if I have a lamp and a bulb, and it's dark. There's nothing burning inside. The filament isn't glowing. And now I flip the switch and the filament glows. So that has introduced, if you will, molid, a new force into the bulb, and that should be usur on Shabbat. This would also apply to basically any other electrical device. You have a fan, the blades aren't doing very much. The moment you flip the switch, so now they're spinning. He talks about it with regard to telephones, which also were being introduced while he's writing these tshuvot. And he says a similar idea, he's if not the first, certainly one of the first poskim to write about the use or the isser of the use of telephones on Shabbat. And this is the idea which is the, if you will, the most accepted in terms of trying to understand why electricity is usur. This idea that you're basically taking an object and you are, which is a dead weight, which I, you know, to what I quipped earlier on, it's a doorstop, and now it does something that is molid. You've given it something which it didn't exist before. The argument against this, and it's important to stress the argument, because as I said, Rav Shlomo Zalman basically undercuts each and every one of these arguments as to saying why it should be usur. And that is, except for the last one, which we'll get to in this 1 second, and basically he says, well, molid only makes sense if it's really new. Here, this is exactly what it's designed for. Right? Every electrical device is designed to be turned on and to be turned off, to be used at certain times and not to be used at other times. To call that molid is disingenuous. That's not molid. Because on the production line, that's exactly what it was designed to do. So any use for this should be and he says, and if you take a look in the left side, in the middle column, where it's in bold, he says the following. Ach Choshvani, after he basically says, he's speaking about the telephone here, and he's saying that that it really shouldn't be usher to use a telephone on Shabbat. Now this is the telephones of the 1940s, 1950s. Well, I'm not exactly sure. This was published only in the 1970s. It's part of his Minchat Shlomo. The original Kuntres on Chashmal was written earlier on, so I don't have the exact year. I can find out. But it's in the 40s or the 50s. He says, Achoshvani shehamon ha'am eino yodeya klal lahafchin b'kach. He says, even though it's my opinion that really the use of a telephone should be mutter on Shabbat, however, most people will not be able to make the subtle discernment, which I'm about to get to, where he thinks that there is a isser, maybe even isser d'oraita. V'yachol lit'ot al yedei zeh. Lomar shemutar gam lahadlik ulechabot et hachashmal b'Shabbat. If we tell people they can use the telephone on Shabbat, they'll say, "Well, basically, the telephone is an electrical device. If I can use a telephone, then I can turn on the lights in my house as well." V'lachen af ledidan, even according to my opinion, which has already rejected the Chazon Ish, which has rejected the Beit Yitzchak. Nevertheless, af lididan ein lahatir davar zeh ki im b'makom tzarech gadol. Therefore, I do not allow for the use of the telephone except in a time of great need. I will say that the psak of the Rav Shlomo Zalman is, as I said, I think the mainstream psak halacha today, with regard to the use of various devices in a shat hadchak, under great need situations of medical need, etc. But I want to examine first what his fear is. So why is, if it's not molid, why are you afraid then of people turning on the lights? Why don't you simply say you can turn on the lights on Shabbat? And the reason for this is because of what had already been put forward back in the 1890s by earlier poskim, but he adopts this, is that basically the question of electricity isn't a question of the electricity in of itself. The question of the electricity is, what does the electricity accomplish? What does the device do? In other words, if you have a situation where the device is going to do a melacha for you, one of the 39 melachot. So give a simple example, because their example is a slightly more difficult example. The simple example would be, I turn on an oven on Shabbat, an electro oven, and I cook something. I put something on the burner, and I now turn on an electrical burner. Right? Very simple, and I cook. Now, is that usur on Shabbat? And the answer would be, yes, that's usur on Shabbat, because you've cooked. Now, the fact that you happen to cook using an electrical appliance is not relevant. Anytime, this is, some of you might be thinking right now, what about what's called grumma, that you're doing something indirectly. Anytime that you're dealing with a closed system, that is not indirect. If I, let's say, drive a car, and I press down on the gas pedal, so I'm not burning the fuel when I step down on the gas pedal. But the fact that that automatically triggers the gas being, again, depending on whatever system you have, you used to be able to say into the carburetor, we can't say that anymore, but doesn't matter. The fact that the fuel is now being burnt, that is a closed system, and that is not grumma. That is something that I know is going to happen. If I fire an automatic weapon and kill someone, I can't say, well, the second bullet, well, that was because of the gases that had been released from the first cartridge and had pushed back the mechanism and then put the new bullet into the chamber. And what can you do? It's just grumma, right? You know, it's indirect. We don't say things like that. If you know that something is going to happen with 100% validity, so that is a closed system and that's not grumma. That is a direct action. So therefore, he says, if I turn on the example that I gave, if I cook using electricity, if I turn on the incandescent bulb, and the assumption is, and this is a bit of a question amongst the poskim, but generally accepted, that the causing of the burning of the filament, that is bishul, or that is mavir, depending again which malacha is, right? If you're interested in signing up for the seminar, we can get into that. But the point, though, is that there's a malacha de oraita that's being involved just by the filament glowing. So my turning on the switch is an issur de oraita, not because of the electricity, but because the electricity has triggered a malacha in the glowing of the filament. If I have a fan, on the other hand, so then he says that that's not a malacha d'oraita. There's no malacha d'oraita to be, you know, spinning propellers, right? If there was, so then most rabbanim or many rabbanim wouldn't be able to speak on Shabbos. This is a right. This is something which is mutter, right? In effect, there's no isser per se, but now he says, and he says this with regard to the telephone, there's no real issur involved in speaking on the telephone line because there is no malacha that's going on because of it. But once you blur this line in terms of electricity and trying to say, is it accomplishing a malacha d'oraita? Is it not accomplishing a malacha d'oraita? That becomes just too complicated. And so therefore, we want to aser. Now, his language is a little bit, when he says we want to say that it's going to be a blanket isser, it's not totally clear. And here, there are two different approaches to understanding Rav Shlomo Zalman. One, which I think is the dominant approach, if you read any of the articles that have come out from the Tzomet Institute, for example, or Piskei Halacha here in the States as well, you'll see that generally speaking, people say that that Rav Shlomo Zalman, even though he had reservations with regard to the notion of molid, was willing to accept l'chumra, the approach of the Beit Yitzchak, and saying that we should be concerned about the possibility of molid. That's one possibility of understanding it. The other possibility is that he's saying that it's usher because of this concern of what will happen, and therefore the use of electricity in Shabbat, because, and this, by the way, that first approach is comes from this line here that he says in that same paragraph that I read a moment ago, in the middle there, where he says that the next bold line in that first paragraph, Achma Eseh Shekvar Hora Zaken. What am I going to do? The elder, Rav Yitzchak Shmalkus, has already given this psak halacha, v'hu agon marenu rabbeinu Shmalkus, v'beit Yitzchak, etc. And hadavar tzarich hachra'a. This is something that requires further analysis. So the implication might be that he's willing to defer to the Beis Yitzchak and say that we should be concerned about this being molid. And this is really, this is what, as I said, I think this is the major approach. The other approach, which is taken, and most recently stated by Rav Nachum Eliezer Rabinovich, the Rosh Yeshiva and Ma'alei Adumim, that basically his approach, meaning Rav Shlomo Zalman's approach, is focused solely on the question of what the electricity is going to accomplish, only with regard to the results. Any other use of electricity on Shabbat is asur because of zeluta milta. It's a zilzul of Shabbat. It's asur because, to use something which has become a pejorative term, it's not Shabbistic. Okay, it's not the way things should be done on Shabbat. But because of that, and so he, Rabinovich, has has taken some heat for this as well. He has a more make-kill approach to the use of modern technology, moving into the 21st century, than other poskim do. It is, he has become an outlier. If the Chazon Ish is an outlier on the Chumra side, Rav Rabinovich is an outlier on the Kula side because of this, and there is a and you can see in some of the articles a polemic really developing in an attempt to squelch that opinion because of the fear, which we'll talk about in a few moments, of what it might unleash, as it were, in terms of the nature of what Shabbos has done. Yeah.
By the second approach, do you mean Zehusa de Shabbos because of what he wrote, that people will confuse it and make a mistake, or you just mean it per se is
Zehusa
de Shabbos?
Okay, so Rabinovich's approach is that it's not because people are going to make a mistake, it's because of things that are being done. Or as if we were to say, what now let's go back 140 years and go into a, if you will, a bizarro type of parallel universe. And the poskim who were dealing with electrical lights with just the filaments had won the day. And that they had said, the consensus had become that the use of electricity on Shabbat, because after all, it's just a light bulb, and was mutter. Imagine what our Shabbat would be like today. Because our Shabbat today, to a large extent, is because, if you want to call it B'siyata d'shmaya, if you want to call it because of a understanding of what the halacha should be, the Ar Shabbat today, and the fact that, you know, there are many people in this room who I am sure are quite thankful that they can tell the people in their offices that they are out of communication for the next 25 hours, and the fact that you know when you sit down around a Shabbos table that you don't have to tell your kids, put away your phones. And the fact that you can have conversations with people. And the fact that you can, you know, have the arguments that you no longer can have in the age of Google. Right? You know, who is, you know, I don't know, is Agarn still alive from, you know, F Troop? I don't know anything. Can you, you know, just pick anything randomly, and you have an argument around the table about that issue? All of that is only because the poskim 140 years ago won the day, and therefore our Shabbat is what our Shabbat is, and that's a good thing. Okay, so the understanding what Zeiluta de Shabbos is, Zilzul of Shabbat, when I said it's gained a pejorative of it's a, you know, it's not Shabbistic, and then you say, well, that's, you know, the rabbi's excuse for ossering anything that he doesn't like, so that isn't true. That's a misunderstanding of what it is. And in fact, I think when I'm going to make the switch in a few minutes into a more educational perspective, as opposed to just understanding, if you will, the dry halacha, I think it's the most important aspect that has to be addressed. But that's his argument, back to Rav Rabinovich, is that his argument is that, and therefore he says, for example, that if you go to an electric sliding door and walk through it, there isn't an isser. Because he says that is not really in any way, going through doors is not something which is is not something which undermines the spirit of Shabbat in any way. It doesn't matter whether it's a door that opened because the sensor caught you and walked through, and you walked through, or because you opened the door. Now, going back 50 years ago, when the idea of sliding doors was open on Star Trek, they had somebody behind the scenes actually rolling down the door, so it would happen. And there were a lot of outtakes of people walking into the doors because the guy on this off screen forgot to do it in time, and people just walked in and hit the door. Right? So this was 50 years ago was the stuff of science fiction, and, you know, now it's just a commonplace. So there's no difference if you have a guy going like this or you have a sensor that opens the door. What difference should it make? That's his Rabinovich's approach. That's not Zeiluta de Shabbat. You see, by the way, when you read the responses to it, Some are more respectful than others because they realize the people who are very respectful and the people who recognize the fact that he is a true Gadol B'Torah. The people who are less respectful are just scared of this because it can, you know, lead to more or less what Rav Shlomo Zalman is concerned about. This is in a recent article, it happens to be a pretty good article. I'm going to refer to it in a second. Rabbi Ike Sutton put together an article. It was just published. It's on the second sheet that just a couple of weeks ago on the use of wearing a smartwatch on Shabbat. One thing that I had a great deal of difficulty with in the article is that he buried Rav Rabinovich's Shita in a footnote, and with the comment that Rabbi Nachum Rabinovich, I'm paraphrasing here, allows for the use of electricity. He is a, he said, this is some, I think this is the exact quote, no other Orthodox posek is of this opinion. Okay, just by saying that, you know, it's sort of like saying, okay, you know, it's like, and then I read looking through the rest of the article to see all of the conservative poskim that he had quoted. Yeah, there was no, it's not a, it was clear that there's a major concern that if this shita is adopted, and I'm not, by the way, I want to make it clear, I have my reservations about the psaf. I said from the beginning, I'm not poskining, and I'm stressing that over and over, but I'm not a proponent of Rabinovich's Shita. I don't want anyone to walk out saying that I was saying that it should be adopted, but it is certainly something that needs to be taken under consideration. I can understand certainly how Rav Rabinovich gets to his conclusion, and how he gets it from Rav Shlomo Zalman, because Rav Shlomo Zalman never says that that he's adopting any of the other shitot l'chumra. He says that they have to be taken into account. He says that I have a concern about it. He says that people will make mistakes in terms of the use of electricity. He says all of this. He never says that, oh, it's molid. He never says we should be concerned about the Chazon Ish or along those lines, or many of the other shitot, which I'm not getting into right now. So this is with regard to electricity. One last point about electricity before we move on, and that is what Rav Shlomo Zalman has said. This is on the second side of the page. Bet shinui zerem chashmali, changing the current in a electrical device. And this is something which has been accepted. It's also, I brought a short quote from Rav Avadi Yosef and the Tshuva and the Yabia Omer. Basically, this is more or less accepted by most poskim that whatever problem might exist with the use of electrical appliances on Shabbat, it does not apply if the current is running and it's a question of adjusting the current. Now that is not to be mistaken. So for example, if you have a fan and and with a switch you can make the blades are running at a lower speed and then the blades now run at a faster speed. So in principle, that is not going to be asur on Shabbat. The rationale being because, well, what did you do? If you were concerned, and he goes through, he said, even if you're concerned about the Chazon Ish, the circuit's already closed. It's just a question of changing the current that's going through. It's already working. So now it's just working a little harder. Or working, it's not working as hard. If you're concerned about the molid factor, what molid has happened? Because it's already been doing something. So if the current is going through it already, this isn't a problem. So here's a good example where you can understand what I mean by the, let's say, taking the Rav Rabinovich approach to Rav Shlomo Zalman. He says, it's usher to use a microphone on Shabbat. It's mutter to use a hearing aid on Shabbat. Okay, now again, I'm working with the technology of the 1950s. But basically, the basic technology is the same. in the two instances. They're working with the basic idea that you have there is a current which is running through the device, and the current changes as a person, as sound waves are introduced into the device, without getting into it. Yeah. I'm sorry? So there are other issues of Hashmat Kol, etc., yes. So, but that's the added issue. In other words, basically, so he says there's not an issue for a person to use this as a hearing device. However, because of other concerns, Hashmat Kol might be one of them, the question of the atmosphere of Shabbat might be another. So he says that microphones, even though they're using the same technology, should not be used on Shabbat. Now, this is, as I said, the technology is identical, but or close enough. Right? I'm sure there are people here in this room who can speak much more learnedly about the technology than I can. Yeah.
The big thing with that is that you're not even doing anything, you're just talking, which may make it more reason to be making.
Okay, but you're talking into a microphone also.
But you're right.
So again, but because of the impact on the larger forum, so that's why he feels it should be forbidden. This is something, as I said, is adopted by other poskim as well. It's interesting. It's not identical. I won't get into the subtle distinctions right now. But Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, and they were written weeks apart, and he published them one right after the other, saying, "Oh, it's mutter to use a hearing aid. Oh, it's usher to use a microphone." Right, using the exact, almost, you know, this is something that the poskim have more or less adopted. Again, there might be some subtle differences in terms of the rationale, but basically, this is the accepted psak. Now, you have to be careful with this. So, for example, a dimmer switch. Again, working now, shifting, we're moving forward, we're into the 1970s now. So, using a dimmer switch, that is not the same as what we're talking about. Because there, one circuit is closed and another circuit is opened. Right? Different filaments are involved. So you have to take a look, again, it depends on, right, if you, what? It depends on whether you're working with an incandescent bulb, whether you're working with a fluorescent bulb, all of these things. Now it becomes confusing. Yeah. Right? What I mean is, now, 40 years ago, it's becoming confusing because each and every appliance, right? We think that in the 21st century it's confusing. It's already beginning to become confusing, and you can understand why it's much easier to simply say electricity should be avoided, and when you give your heter, it's going to be because it's a shatat chak. If you have a situation where a person can't hear on Shabbat, so that is a very serious situation, and now to be machmir for that person or for that large group of people is something which, because of a chashash, and it is cruel. So at the same time, the fear that this is going to, now because we've told people that they can use the hearing aids, so therefore people are going to now allow for microphone uses in shuls or what have you, is relatively small, and I think history has borne that out, that you don't have to worry about it. So but this is what the poskim are dealing with. But it's important to keep this in mind, that in terms of the halacha, there isn't any issur whatsoever if you are merely changing the current. Now, I was just one quick anecdote. This is when I began to really begin to think about these issues a little more in depth. This was about 8 years ago. I took a group of my students on a tour of the Tzomet Institute in Alon Shvut, and the person gave a very nice presentation and discussed something which was a radical breakthrough that they had just come up with. One of the early Tzomet, for those people who aren't familiar with it, is an organization which was founded about 30 years ago by Rav Yisrael Rosen, Zichrono Levracha, who was an electrical engineer and a very fine, serious Talmid Chacham. His basic approach was that everything in the modern state should be able to work without the need to use a Shabbos goy, in effect. Now, that was basically the idea. And he said to basically, primarily focusing on technology, but not only on technology, issues that deal with society as well as a major focus of the organization. And they're the ones who put out the Grumma switches, etc., that have allowed for many things that we're familiar with to work. With some controversy at times. One of their earliest inventions, if you will, was to deal with the problem of doctors writing prescriptions on Shabbat when you were dealing with non-pikuach nefesh situations. And so the way that they dealt with it was by creating a pen that had disappearing ink. That you would write the prescription, it would last for about 25 hours, which would give enough time, even if you wrote at the beginning of Shabbat, 26 hours, whatever it was, that it could be transcribed and then disappeared, and that would only be an Isser Derabanan, because you're using ink that isn't permanent. They came up with a much better solution. They now have a keyboard where there is current, which is constantly flowing through all the keys, and it's just a question when you press down on a key that the current is raised on that particular key and the signal, etc. What? It's not a Grumma. This is again, but it's not Grumma phone. It's the term Grumma. Grumma is something which is indirect. This is quite direct. But because there is no electricity, the electricity is constantly flowing, there's no Isser involved whatsoever. And the person giving the tour said, oh, showed the keyboard, and said, we got this idea from cell phones, because the screens, there's an electrical current in the screen, and all you're doing is you're changing the current. So afterwards, I went over to him and I said, then why can't we use our cell phones on Shabbat? Hamana, 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 hamana. Right? That was the, right, Ed Norton. That was the Ayin Sham. But that is, that was the...
You gotta correct that. It's Ralph Crampton, not Ed Norton.
No, but he said Ed Norton. That was his... That was the end of the quote. However, that is the, that was the problem. In other words, now, again, if you say, looking back, taking a look at this, this is a classic example. I mean, if he had his wits about him, he should have told me, this is exactly the same thing as a hearing aid as opposed to a microphone. Except the microphone, on steroids. If you now have the use of cell phones on Shabbat and smartphones on Shabbat, and you're saying it, so then you are undermining Shabbat tremendously. The answer that he gave, which also might be true, and I didn't say this caveat. Anything I'm saying with regard to a specific device, you have to, just on a technical level, everything has to be looked at. And to find out, does your device exactly fit this description? Now, the article, for example, that I mentioned, Rabbi Sultan's article, talks about the difference between first and second generation Fitbits and third and fourth generation Fitbits. Okay? These things change all the time. And something which might have been, if you will, permissible in a earlier type of device, the next generation might be completely different and the halachot might have changed. So don't take anything I'm saying here, as I've said for about the seventh time now, as anything is a psak halacha. Okay? I'm just talking about the issue per se. Even if it holds true, I have no problem with this keyboard that they're working with, but I would have very serious reservations about taking that and saying that I can now use my cell phone on Shabbat. Yeah.
Why can't we adopt the principle that if it leads to zilzul shabbat, then it's also...
Okay, good. Hold that. We're going to come to it in a second. I just want to now go switch from electricity, pardon the pun, and go now to a question of Melechet Machshevet. I said that would only take 20 minutes, and it took 50. So we'll now talk about the second major issue that has to be addressed, and that is the question of what is my intent? What is my intent? Now, normally speaking here, and this is a, as I said, is a huge topic in of itself. The Shabbat itself is different than many other areas of halakha. Shabbat has a notion of what's called Melechet Machshevet Asra Torah, without getting into where the source for this is. It's based on the parashiyot that we're going to be reading soon. That you have to have intent in terms of doing what you are doing. This leads to a machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, Gemara and Shabbat in several places, with regard to what's known as a davar she'eino mitkaven. If I do something which triggers a forbidden action, I do a neutral action, and that action has no bearing on Shabbat in of itself. The classic example is I drag, let's say, a bench on Shabbat. There's no isser in dragging a bench on Shabbat. However, it might, depending on what the makeup of the floor is, or lack of flooring, if it's a dirt type of floor, might create a groove inside in the floor. If it's outside, that could be a problem of choresh, of plowing. If it's inside, perhaps an issue of boda. Again, without getting into what melacha is triggered. The melacha is usur. The act that I'm doing is not. I'm just pulling something along the floor. Now, if it is not my intent to make that groove, and this is important to stress, and it is not a necessity that the groove will be made. Occasionally it will happen, occasionally it will not happen. I don't know and I can't predict, and I'm not trying to do it. So then that is a machloka between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion, if it creates something, it's usher nevertheless. And Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that if I didn't intend on that result, then it is mutar to do, even if the result might happen. The bulk of the poskim, there are those who paskin like Rabbi Yehuda Luchumra, however, already in the Gemara, and then followed with the Rishonim, however, the bulk of the poskim accept the opinion of Rabbi Shimon that a davar she'eino mitkaven, an act which was non-intentional, is again not necessarily going to happen, is permissible. However, in a situation where you know, or any knowledgeable observer knows, that the result will necessarily occur, that is a different category, and that's called a psik resha, literally to cut off a head. And the colorful example that the Rambam uses, it's not found in the Gemara, but that Rambam uses is that if you are at wit's end with your small child on a Shabbat, and you need something for the child to play with, so you rip the head off of a chicken so that the child can play with a chicken head as a ball, right? And you say, but it is not my intent to kill the chicken. I want to take a nap. That's all. And so now, right, because after all, everyone knows that chicken heads are hours of fun. So now, that is permissible on Shabbat. That is usher, excuse me, on Shabbat, because you can't pretend that the result is not going to happen.
So you're saying the Rambam cries foul.
What?
I was too chicken to say that.
Okay. Okay. Oh, okay. So now, back to our regularly scheduled program.
That's how you tell.
But having said this, there are different examples of this. In other words, once I say the psik resha, it's basically, again, there you can look at the psik resha question in different ways. Do we say that you really did know... You can't pretend that you didn't know, and therefore it's as if you did know, or that we say it, and there are different distinctions between these two approaches, whether it's the person himself or whether it's sort of the observer making that ruling. However, there is a question with regard to what's called a psik resha de lo nechale, that you're not interested in this particular result. It's not something which is of tremendous interest to you. Perhaps, ironically, the example of the chicken dying might be an example of a psik resha de lo nechale in of itself. However, the if you have situations where you know it's going to happen, but you don't really care if that occurs or not. An example might be the following. There's a lot more to be said about it. A refrigerator. Okay? So this is a good example. Opening up the door of a refrigerator is a neutral act. There is no problem in opening up a door to a refrigerator on Shabbat. However, if the light goes on, we all know, right, this is the one of the major issues of people. Did you unscrew the light bulb? What do you do with the modern, the LED refrigerators that don't have light bulbs, right? And how do you disconnect the lights? But that's a psik resha de nechale. That's not a psik resha de lo nechale, because you want the light to go on. Because, generally speaking, that's why they put the bulb in there in the first place. The people want the light so that you can see what's inside the refrigerator, especially if the lights are out in the kitchen, because after all, it's Shabbos, and the Shabbos clock turned them off. So now, you want to see what's inside the refrigerator, so that would be a psik resha de nechale. However, if it triggers the motor to turn the refrigerator on, the cooling system on, that might be a psik resha de lo nechale, because it doesn't really matter to the person whether it goes on now or it goes on in 10 minutes, in half an hour. It might also be, by the way, davar she'eino mitkaven, because it's not necessarily going to go on automatically. It depends on the type of refrigerator that you have. There is a lot of ink has been spilled on this question in terms of trying to understand it. However, it's a psik resha lo nechale, and if it's a psik resha lo nechale, and you throw on one other level, that it's also a derabanan that's happening, or that the result isn't even a doraita, so then you can build your mousetrap, as it were, and you can now have a situation where this can become mutter. Now, where does this come up? And right now comes up all the time. That's with sensors. You walk into a room and lights go on. So should that be mutter or usur on Shabbat? Do you have to be concerned about it? So one major group of poskim, and this is what I put on the right side and taking from the approach of Rav Avadya to be walking in front of security cameras, and this is also the approach Rav Schechter has written about this and more or less goes along the same lines, is that you can walk in front of a security camera on Shabbat because the isser that might be involved in terms of you, what you're doing now on the computer screen, is only durabanan, along the lines of the disappearing ink that I mentioned before, because your image is going to be erased from the screen as soon as you're off of it. And also, you don't really care if it's there in the first place, so it becomes a psik resha de lo nechale of a rabbinic injunction, and therefore it's not a problem. Okay, this is, yeah. Okay, so this is exactly what I'm going to get to. Hold on. But I'm just saying, now, the other approach, which was approach which Rav Vosner, Zichrono Livracha, came up with about 20 years ago, he basically says, without getting into how he gets into it, basically says that if you are doing what you normally do all the time, and you're not doing anything which is intentional in any way, it's not even a psik resha, it's not even in this concern. He says if you're walking, he's talking about walking in the street when sensors first came out and street lights would go on, or people's lights would go on in their yards, things along those lines. This is back in the 1990s. And so he says it's not usur to do this, because this isn't considered to be a malacha at all, since you are not, you're just doing what you normally do, you're walking. And that walking isn't something which is a psik resha. In other words, it's not an action like dragging a bench. That is something that you're doing something which you know in the back of your mind might have effect. When you're just walking, you're just breathing, you're just doing normal human activities, these are things that aren't considered to be even on the level which can trigger a psik resha, Rav Vozner said. By the way, he is quite aware that this is a radical tshuva. There are two tshuvot, I just took snippets, I don't have time to read it right now. If you take a look, it's Amichet, he says the principle, someone questioned it, they're both very short tshuvot, someone questioned it, he responded, and he says that it's, you know, he uses a terminology that you know that he is forced to be be defending a position which is not so simple. Pshita shekol zman she'eno choshev mamash lelechet leman hidlik uchiyotze bazeh she'enanu mitzarfim halichato haregila letotzah hanal. He says it's obvious. If he says that, whenever you see something, somebody says it's pshita, you know it's not pshita, right? That's obvious. But he says it's pshita. It's so obvious. You don't even have to. Why are you even bothering me with this? If you're just walking, that's not an activity that has to even be questioned at all. And then at the bottom, I should have put it in bold. I apologize. He says Heyoti, the last line, Heyoti ish amus, since I'm a very busy man, ein p'nai l'harich od, I don't have time to go on about this, v'gam ein p'nai l'vikuchim haloch v'tavach, and I also don't have time to get into a back and forth with you. But I was, leave me alone, this is my psak, take it or leave it, but don't bother me, this is my psak halacha, right? So, and then he runs out the door, right? That is the psak. Now, if you take Rav Vozner, then this, by the way, and you can go online and you can both in terms of writing and hear Shirim as well. Recently, Rav Rimon, who's also on the advisory board of Tzomet, as well as being the head of the Bet Midrash at the Machon Lev Institute. So he takes this very seriously, this idea of Rav Vozner, and basically he differentiates. He says, basically, if you're doing things which are creating, the sensors are working, and you're just walking into a room, so this is something which you would be permissible. If on the other hand, and here, this is like the question that I want to get to right now, because now I'm going to want to shift for a second. But he says that you can't walk through a door. You can't use a sensor, let's say if you're in a bathroom, and you want to you want the water to come out of the sink, right? Then he says you can't. Because he says people, when you walk through doors, right? You know that if you're going to, when you walk into the room, if the door is there, you're going to hit the glass. You're going to be back in Star Trek in the 1960s. So you have to make sure that the door opens. You want that door to open. If it's opposed to a situation when you walk into a hotel room, right? This is a little bit of advice. If you're in a hotel and you wake up in the summer and it's too hot in the room, what are you supposed to do? Wave your arm, right? Because they're all of the in the more modern hotels, everything is with motion sensors now. So if you've been sleeping too soundly, the air conditioning went off, and all you have to do is move a little bit, and the air conditioning will go back on. So you walk in, right? I was in a hotel this past Shabbat when I was down on campus at Maryland visiting my Talmidim there, and I'm in a hotel. I have absolutely no idea, right, what is going on in the room, because I walked into the room, I didn't walk into the room. Right? I do know that there's an electrical lock on the door, and so if I use a key card, so again, exactly which mechanism is involved, that I don't know, because there are different mechanisms that are involved, and perhaps they might have subtleties that if you're dealing with a particular technologies has to be addressed. So I put something between the lock and the door so that you could just push it open without it locking. Right? However, I do not know, and I have to be totally honest, if when I closed the door when I went to sleep and I had it locked, is it mutter for me to open up the door? In other words, is that triggering something, even though it seems to be mechanical? Right? Is there an electrical current that is being changed because of that? I do not know that. And so basically he says that when you can pretend that the you don't know who the wizard is behind the curtain, so then it is going to be mutter. But when you don't know, or you do know where the wizard is, so then it becomes usser. But that, of course, creates a tremendous amount of problems, if you ask me. I understand exactly why he's saying it. And the example that I just gave you in the hotel room is as good an example as any other. However, more and more, we know what's behind the curtain. In other words, we might not know exactly what the technology that's involved, right? But we understand that things are going on. In a modern apartment building, when you flush a toilet manually, so it impacts on the water pressure in the entire building, and there are sensors built throughout that are going to determine how much pressure that's involved. And the fact that you know or you don't know, but you know that it's going on. Right? I know that in that hotel room, presumably, there was a sensor on the ceiling. I know, presumably, that it was impacting on the temperature in the room. I don't know for 100%. I didn't want to, maybe I did want to know. Right? But this is a question that has to be thought about. You to simply say we're going to pretend we don't know, is that really a viable halachic approach? So that's where, if you will, it's taking me a little more longer than I wanted it to. I apologize. But that is, if you will, dealing with a very quick view, overview of the technical halachic side of things. And the problem, and this is, I want to sketch three possible futures, if you will, in the next few minutes. And because there are really three possibilities, if you ask me, how the future is going to play out in this regard, or probably a combination of those different approaches. And we have to be thinking about this very, very seriously. By the way, I just mentioned one thing. Getting back to Alexa, if you, and I want to thank my nephew for having sent, who works in Amazon, and sending me a paper from Amazon with the text, some of the technical workings of Alexa. So Alexa itself is a pretty stupid computer. Okay? Don't tell her I said so. But basically, it's very all the Echo itself does is basically is waiting for the welcome word for you to say Alexa. You could change it to another word if you want, and then it pops on and sends the information to the cloud. All the work, most of the work anyway, the overwhelming majority of the work is being done in the cloud. Now, in order for it to be doing that, so there are different things that are going on with the Alexa, and it would be really, really easy, and I'm not an engineer by any means, but it should be really easy to create a Grumma Alexa. Right, a Greco, okay? Whatever you want to call it, to allow you to work without any problem whatsoever, because the buffer is constantly on. The current is constantly flowing in the machine. What happens when it hears the word Alexa, so then there are circuits that might be opening and closing because the light colors change in terms of to let you know that the microphone is active and things along those lines that could easily be disconnected. And you have all sorts of different things, and then presumably the current is working on the other side also. Again, I'm saying quite possibly, not trying to tell anyone that they should use their Amazon at all, right? There might be some of you who don't want to use Amazon any day of the week, but this is that's a different question. But this is now the technical things are lead me to, if you will, different visions of the future. One vision that you have, that I have anyway, is simply to say, this is too complicated. This is really, really too hard. And the same way that many appliances come with the Shabbos mode, or holiday switch, as they are known, so we should have, as things get more wired, as we have the Internet of Things, as homes become smart homes, etc., and everything that's being built, so then we're going to have stupid homes. Right? We're going to have to be halachically caught in the technology of the 1980s. And that's it. Stop. Full stop. That's what we're going to do. Right? We're going to perhaps adopt the approach of the Chazon Ish and say electricity is an Issur D'oraita and we have to worry about it as an Issur D'oraita and there's nothing else you can do about it. That's one possible vision of the future. Another possible vision, which I think is the most likely vision, is the vision that I've been sort of speaking about until now. And that is to go product by product. Each particular usage. Trying to figure out what is mutter, what isn't mutter, what is going to be acceptable according to the Shita of Rav Shmelkis, what is going to be acceptable according to the Shita of Rav Shlomo Zalman, what is going to be acceptable according to the Shita of the Chazon Ish, etc., etc., etc. What is considered to be a psik resha, what's not considered to be a psik resha, etc., etc., etc. Very confusing, changing all the time. In fact, the only way that I see that working, somewhat ironically, and I actually spoke about this to one of my students who is into app design, is to create an artificial intelligence algorithm that will basically be fed in the technical documents of every device that comes on, have a guideline built into the algorithm based on the different shitot and the different variations there are, and will pump out a list of different devices and different things that are mutter and different devices and different things that are usher. I don't think that human intelligence is going to be able to keep up with the barrage. You know, just saw last night in an article in National Geographic, actually, doesn't really matter where, that by 2020, right, next year, there are going to be more than 50 billion devices connected to the internet worldwide. Okay, so to keep up with that kind of pace, and it's only going to grow exponentially in the next decade or two, so to keep up with that kind of pace, so there's no way that the articles that are going to be coming out of describing each and every device, whether it's mutter or usser, can possibly keep up with it. And I think the only way to do it is to have some kind of app that's going to do it for you. He was very excited about the idea. Felt from an artificial intelligence perspective, it's a really easy thing to do. So maybe it'll be out. The last possibility, which is I think the most important possibility, and the one which unfortunately I'm giving the least amount of time because I'm way over time already, and but I think it's the most important thing. We spoke about Zeiluta de Shabbat. What?
Okay.
Okay, the Seder, okay. Okay. So here the question is, what's Shabbat? You know, it's like, lost in all the details, lost in the, and the details are very, very, very important, but lost in the analysis, not of the trees of the forest, but the veins of the leaves of the trees of the forest, lost in that, is the forest. And the fact that Zeiluta de Shabbat, Zilzul of Shabbat, is the footnote. And saying, well, what is Shabbat is, well, okay, we could allow all of these electrical appliances, but it'll change Shabbat, so don't do it. Right? Which is basically what people are saying, and it's true, but that's exactly what Shabbat is all about. And I apologize if I take a couple more minutes just to analyze this. It's important to realize, if you take a look at the last sheet, that the Shabbat develops. In the Torah, it develops. We're in the middle of the Parshiyot that this happens in. When Shabbat is introduced back in Parshat B'Shalach 2 weeks ago, it's used as Shabbaton. And Shabbaton, there's no mention of Melacha at all. Even the term with regard to the man, Et Asher Tofu, Toefu, etc., when you should bake now before Shabbat at Vashelu, the Nitziv points out, and it's Pshat. that there hadn't been any malacha given yet. There was no iser to cook or to bake yet. How could Moshe say, bake and cook today? It's not that he was introducing halachot then. He basically says, and this is number 10 here in the Netziv, he says that basically what all Moshe was saying was, prepare for Shabbat before Shabbat. There is no malacha of Shabbat yet. That will come at Sinai. And by the way, even that develops, there's no iser, there's no concept of chilul Shabbat of in the sense of there being a penalty until the Mishkan. In other words, going through, you see, it never says that that if you do malacha that you incur a death penalty until the end of Sefer Shemot. Shabbat, when it was given primarily, and first and foremost, I shouldn't say primarily, first and foremost, as an educational moment in terms of what is Shabbaton, what is creative resting. That is the nature, the core nature of what Shabbat is, and Melacha is a component of that. If you do Melacha, then you have not, then you violated this notion of resting on Shabbat. Now, this is not my chiddush. This is the chiddush of, well, you can find it already in the Gemara in different places, but this is what the Rambam says. So, for example, in number 11, the Rambam, when he talks about what are the mitzvot in Shabbat, he says, Yesh bichlalan chamesh mitzvot. There are five mitzvot, and this gets to your original question. Where's the Aveira? So the Aveira is, first of all, what's the mitzvah? How do you rest on Shabbat? So he says there are five mitzvot on Shabbat. Two of them are mitzvot aseh. The first mitzvah at aseh, aleph, lishbot bashvi'i, to rest on the seventh day. And then, only then, bet, shelo la'asot bo malacha, not to do malacha. Now the Rambam, I didn't bring where the Rambam fleshes this out, but the Rambam later on will say, if I do malacha, by definition, I'm not resting. But there are other activities that I can do, which means that I'm not resting, even if I don't do melacha. And this is really brought to bear by a very important piece of the Ramban, where he writes this in several different places, almost word for word being the same, and they were written at different periods in his life. So it's very interesting to note that the Ramban thought about this idea originally when he was a teenager, and he continued to write the same idea 60 years later in his 70s when he wrote the Perush al Torah, which is the most famous formulation of it. And he gives an incredible snapshot of what a medieval marketplace looks like. He's talking about it happens to be in regard to Rosh Hashanah and not Shabbat, but it's the same term of Shabbaton. And he says the following, and I'm going to read it inside because it's so important. V'nira li shamidrash hazeh lomar shenitztavina min ha-Torah liyot lanu menucha b'yom tov. The Torah is telling us we have to rest on Yom Tov, afil midvarim she'enan melacha, even from those things which are not technically melacha. Lo shi'itrach kol hayom limdod ha-tfuot v'lishkol ha-peirot v'amatanot u'malei ha-chaviyot yayin. Do not be involved all day long measuring grain, weighing fruit, dealing with the barrels of wine, lifanota kelim v'gam ha'avanim mibayit mikakom l'makom, from moving heavy items from one place in the house to another. V'im haita ir mukefet choma udlatot nu'ulot balayla, and if you have an eruv around your city, you amsim alachamorim, you could lay up the donkeys, va'af yayin va'anavim v'te'enim v'chol masai yaviyu b'yom tov, you can bring all of these goods into the marketplace on Yom Tov, v'yeh shuk malei l'chol mekach u'memkar, u'tiyeh hachanut p'tucha v'achenvanim nakif v'ashulchanim al shulchanam v'azuhuvim lifneihem. The stores will be open, people will pay on credit, the same way that people play Scrabble, right? The only way, how can you play Scrabble on Shabbos? Right, you have a book, right? How can you have your Yom Kippur appeals, right? Because we give out the little cards and you fold it down. So you can do it in the stores too, right? No big deal. There is no issur in having the money changers giving their money on Shabbat. All of this is all a all of those are Isurei Drabanan. The workers will get up early in the morning to do their work. They'll hire themselves out as though it was any day of the week. Nothing I just said, the Ramban says, has any malacha involved at all. Lakach amrat Torah Shabbaton. So the Torah said, rest. And understand that everything else stems from that rest. And this, of course, is the core question. So the third vision, if you will, of the future that I have, is to, the Ramban is talking in the Middle Ages. The Ramban could not have imagined a leisure society. The Ramban could not have imagined a society where things are getting done, not with a flip of the switch, but just simply by saying things. The Ramban, we can barely imagine a society where we ourselves will be wired into the net. And will, in our terms of people thinking, and it's already happened. Whereas in terms of, for patients who are paralyzed, so the that chips have been able to be inserted into their brains, so their thoughts are able to activate different devices. And it's not that far down the road where this will become, there'll be a lot of debate about it, but that this will be part of our lives. And now we have to really have, I think, a open discussion about what is the nature of Shabbaton. And this is something which is going to go in, I'm not an optimist. or better yet, I am an optimist. It will always get worse. Okay? That is a, that's true. I think it's going to be very, very messy over the course of the next few decades as to, in terms of the halachot that are involved as things settle. Part of this is top down. What was Chazal's approach to this because of Shabbaton? They created Isurei Derabanan. They created Isurei Derabanan, according to the Ramban, according to the Rambam, in order to protect Shabbaton. Because the understanding is that people are, it's much easier to explain to people or to tell people this is usur rather than to tell people, let's think positively, what is the nature of this Shabbat? And that's why, and it's a terrible thing, that when I ask my Talmidim, what is Shabbat about? It always starts with what's usur on Shabbat, and not what is positive about Shabbat. All the time. But that's one approach, and that's an understandable psychologically why that approach is going to happen. And it could be that things that I mentioned before, just saying, okay, electricity is usur, we have to disconnect, that's the simplest way of dealing with it. Maybe that will be the way it goes. At the same time, as was already raised here, there are so many things that are being introduced that it's going to be impossible to disconnect. So you're going to have the top down, but it also has to be bottom up. And I just will close with the following example, because this has already happened. And you're not even aware that it's happened. But every single person in this room, most likely, is a participant in this. What do I mean? 1977, Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked by one of his grandchildren with regard to using a Shabbos clock to cook on Shabbat. Rav Moshe responded, if you want to look at it's Orach Chaim Chelek Dalet, the Siman Samach. He wrote he responded to the question, and he created with regard to Shabbos clocks. Rav Moshe was very much opposed to Shabbos clocks. And he said that this is going to, he understood it being an expression of Amir La'akum, don't ask me why right now, but okay. And he understood it as being a question of undermining the spirit of Shabbat, and he felt that it should be usur. And he wrote, he said, this is 1977, so everyone is already using timers on Shabbat for lights. So he says, how can I allow for lights to be used in timers? he wasn't willing, perhaps if he had been asked in the 1960s, it could very well be that he would have come out very strongly against using timers, and we would not use timers on Shabbat. But he was too late. It was 1977 already. And so he writes, I It's true, I'm opposed to timers. I'm willing to be makil with regard to timers on lights on Shabbat, because he makes a connection to the way that Amir la'akub is telling a non-Jew to light things on, light candles on Shabbat were used in a minority opinion, that you could use it, and since some people did it for that, I will compare that, the use of lights, but nothing else should be used. Okay? Now we all know, 40 years later, that Rav Moshe's opinion has not been accepted. Right? People use timers for all sorts of things. They use it for air conditioners, they use it for platot for Shabbat, they use it for so many dishwashers. By the way, it's a machloket between me and my wife as to whether you can use that dishwasher. You can guess who wins the psak halacha. Anyway, you have all sorts of items that are used with Shabbos clocks, with timers on Shabbat, including those things which are hardcore d'oraita, right? When you turn on a electric heating plate, so that's a d'oraita just about according to anyone, right? The coils inside are would be considered mavir about universally, and that's a very serious melacha d'oraita. And yet just turning on the plata, even if you're just cooking, and just heating it up. So. But people do this. Or for the dishwasher, for example, is that it causes the water to be boiled, not quite boiling, but certainly heated well beyond Yad Soledet Bo on Shabbat, and you set the timer before Shabbat to do it. So we do this. Rav Moshe lost, as it were, in terms of this. However, at the same time, in terms of Zeluta de Shabbat, he won. By that I mean that, think about it. It's understood, right? It might be a question whether you can use a timer. Some people will say that you can use it for the heating tray. Some people will say that you shouldn't use it for the heating tray. But it's certainly well within the accepted psak halacha that it's mutter. Very strong. The same thing holds true with dishwashers, etc. But will anyone put a timer on their TVs? Will anyone put a timer on their stereo system or their radios? Why not? In terms of pure melacha, it's much, much worse to use a timer for a plat of Shabbat, for a heating tray, than it is to have for an LED screen, which might not be any melacha whatsoever. And so, but yet we all understand instinctively that the use of a timer for one item will fundamentally undermine the spirit of Shabbaton in our society and violate what the mitzvah aseh of Shabbat is about. And again, I'm stressing that it's not a rabbinic chumrah of Shabbistic, but rather the core of what Shabbat is, of Shabbaton. To have a timer for your television, if you ask me, is probably is probably a violation of the mitzvah aseh of Shabbaton. But to have a timer for your dishwasher, and as a result, having that much easier Friday night and being able to have a much more relaxed Shabbat as a result, right, might be fostering that same Shabbaton. So this is the same type of question on steroids, and I stress it's a much bigger question with regard to sensors, with regard to the Internet of Things, with regard to artificial intelligence. But this is really the discussion that has to happen, and it has to happen not only top-down in terms of the psakim of the Rabbanim, but also from the perspective of the community. And the communities, and there very well might be different approaches in communities, and it can. And there's I'm afraid it might create fault lines where it's one thing when you don't eat in, let's say, if I'm machmir on, I happen to have, one of my chumrot is I don't eat yasha. I don't eat chadash, excuse me, I only eat yasha. So okay, so there's certain things that I won't eat when I'm here. I can't eat the Dunkin' Donuts, I drank the coffee. Fine. But if I can't walk into someone's home on Shabbat, because they have a smart home. And I think, or facial recognition technology, which is going to be really ubiquitous pretty soon. All the doors are going to be opening based on someone's face being recognized by the... you can't walk in anywhere. How are you going to deal with that? So again, you can deal with it device by device, or you can look at it and ask, what is Shabbat all about? I hope and I pray that we do it the final way, and that the meaning through Shabbaton, and have a much better and enhanced value of Shabbat as a result. Thank you very much.
David Levy. Stephen Weiss.
Oh, boy. Have you had this?